From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Bruce Maimon. Gay marriage became legal yesterday in the state of Washington, the seventh state to do so. At the same time, the New Jersey State Senate passed a measure similar to Washington's, something neither chamber of the Jersey legislature has done heretofore. And both these legislative actions came less than a week after another legal defeat for Prop 8 here in California. Joining us from Seattle, longtime newspaper man John Connolly, who joins us from, I assume, his cluttered desk at the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. John, welcome to Insight.
It's Joel, and it's my desk is a mess.
Okay, fine. I'd like to, you know, good. I'd like to start with where you were last night. Why don't you tell us about that?
Cold, raw night up here, and Rick Santorum blew through the state on the day that the governor signed same-sex marriage into law, met with opponents of this, and then spoke last night and was heckled by the place where he spoke was right near the encampment of what remains of occupied Tacoma. So he became the latest political figure to endure a massive heckling at a Northwest rally. We have been unkind to politicians all the way back almost exactly a century to when William Howard Taft was stung on the neck by a bee on a visit to Seattle.
You have a great picture in the PI on their website this morning where there are hecklers protesting against Santorum, and then there's somebody standing behind them who's a Santorum supporter yelling at the hecklers. I think you'd have to give some credit at least to Santorum for sort of going into the lion's den, no?
He certainly did, and he attracted a large number of supporters. So it was a matter of chance of we are the 99% versus chance of USA, USA, and Santorum letting the crowd respond, asking where do our rights come from, and his supporters answering in unison, God.
Your governor, Christine Gregoire, is in her last term. Now, the cynic in me says she supported this legislation because she had really nothing to lose. Would you confirm or say no?
I'll do a variation on both. She was downcast and tired last fall, mainly as a result of having to all the cuts that she's had to make in the budget. But essentially, she's a practicing Catholic who found God on the same-sex marriage issue, particularly goaded on by two daughters who strongly support this and whose generation strongly supports this. So it's essentially been an act of self-rejuvenation, taking on the local archbishop, pressing this legislation, and then basking in the adulation as it was signed into law.
We're speaking with Joel Connolly. He's a reporter for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer about the state of Washington legalizing gay marriage yesterday. You mentioned something pretty interesting when you talked about generational, and I want to ask you about that. I wonder if you see any inevitability there. You've covered Seattle and Washington state politics and policy for the PI for 35 years. You've seen this matter evolve over time. Do you get a sense that anti-gay marriage majorities, which the opponents have relied on a lot, is fading as time passes?
According to our Washington poll, that opposition has melted away literally in the last 6 years. In a larger sense, however, Seattle was the first city in America to defy the old Anita Bryant movement and vote to sustain an anti-discrimination ordinance that had been passed by the city. This was all the way back in 1978, at the same time that California was voting on it for the first time. In 2009, we voted again to sustain domestic partnership laws that had been passed by the legislature. We may very well be the first state to actually vote for gay marriage, and it is because 65% of younger voters support this. Literally, the opponents of this are literally dying off.
Yeah. Well, opponents do have an option right now. The law does not go into effect until June 7th. But if the opponents of gay marriage can get an initiative together and on the ballot allowing voters to overturn the law, they'd have to do that provided they get enough signatures. If they fail to get enough signatures by June 6th, the law takes effect the very next day. If enough signatures are gathered, that puts the law on hold pending an outcome in November. What are their chances for getting enough signatures?
I first of all think that the evangelicals who are doing this, plus the National Organization for Marriage, can probably put it on the ballot. At the same time, however, there is a great deal of support for this, even in the business community, even some of our major employers like Starbucks endorsing same-sex marriage. We're going to have to see that whether what happens up here is what happened in California in 2008, where you had the Catholic Church using literally the bully pulpit, a large amount of Mormon money that came in late, and the social conservatism of particularly African-American churches, which barely put Prop 8 over the top. I tend to think that the law would start out as a favorite, and our Washington poll shows that 55% of those surveyed, at least last October, would vote to sustain marriage equality if it was passed by the legislature.
For the sake of argument, what's left for gay marriage opponents then if voters defeat their ballot measure, should it get on the ballot in November?
Probably to double their bets and try to put an initiative on the ballot defining marriage as the union of one man and one woman under the state constitution.
And if that loses on a ballot vote, would a lawsuit be the next thing? That's kind of what's happened down here.
We have to see how the legal challenges to Proposition 8 and to the Federal Defense of Marriage Act go. I tend to think probably a great deal of more definition of this as being the left coast and of Washington as being a heathen part of it.
All right, then. Well, I know it's been a long day and a long night for you yesterday, and you're back at it again today. Joel Connolly, a longtime reporter for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, now a digital-only publication whose coverage you can check out at seattlepi.com. Joel, sorry about that, about the name, but thank you for joining us today.
Not at all. Thank you.
All right. Let's shift gears now and move from the front pages to the sports pages. There's growing buzz in Seattle that their city may get a new NBA team, and the Sacramento Kings look ripe for the picking. From Seattle's other newspaper, the Seattle Times, sports writer Bob Condotta joins us for the move. Bob, welcome to Inside. Have I got the pronunciation of your last name correct?
Yeah, you have. Yeah, Condotta, yeah.
Condotta, very good. Talk to me about this. Can Seattle make this happen?
Yeah, well, we'll see. There's certainly, I think, better odds of it happening now than there were 4 or 5 years ago. Obviously, that's a frustrating thing to a lot of people. If they had just done this then, they could have just kept the Sonics, and which is now the Oklahoma City Thunder and maybe the best team in the NBA. So, it's maybe one of those things of not realizing what you have till it's gone, or certain people not realizing it anyway. But there does seem to be a more favorable political climate for getting it done now, and in part also I think there's some private interest people out there that have maybe a better wherewithal to get it done now. There's kind of a new person involved, essentially, that Christopher Hansen, who is apparently kind of the main guy behind this, and if he can, make it work primarily with private funding, governments are always more in favor of that.
What kinds of conversations have anybody up there been having with the Kings owners, the Maloofs?
Nobody knows that. My hunch is, I guess to understand exactly what's going on here, there's a person named Christopher Hansen. He's kind of a Seattle resident. He actually lives in the Bay Area now. He's the guy at the forefront of this. He started buying up land near where Safeco Field is, apparently for the intent of building an arena there that might house both an NBA and an NHL team. And some people would tell you the NHL team is more of a realistic thing to happen more quickly. So the city of Seattle is basically just kind of saying, hey, this is great. If the guy wants to do this and build it on its own, and we got to make sure that it's going on up the right way. So I would doubt that people in the city of Seattle are having conversations with anybody. I think they're kind of just sitting back and waiting for Christopher Hansen to start getting this thing done from his end. What kind of conversations Hansen may be having with anybody is hard to tell. David Stern did say last week that he had met with Hansen at some point in the last year or two, but whether that involved moving any specific team there, was kind of left uncertain. Sounded like it might have been more just a general conversation about arena issues in Seattle.
Is that going to be a deal breaker, getting a new arena, either for a franchise or for the league?
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's the only reason the Sonics aren't here now. There's a misnomer that the team left because of lack of support. That's not correct at all. The team left because there was a several-year issue with getting the arena here. Howard Schultz, the owner of Starbucks, who owned the team, kind of just got fed up and decided to sell the team on the quick to a group from Oklahoma City. And that group, frankly, bought the team from day one with the intent of taking it to Oklahoma City. They made outrageous demands for an arena, knowing it would never get approved anywhere, and then use that as a chance to take the team. And so the 2 years that they owned the team here in Seattle, there was lackluster support for the obvious reason that everybody knew the team was gone, and the team wasn't any good on the court either. If they built an arena in Seattle, I think there'd be a team here really quickly, and it wouldn't have to just be Sacramento either. The New Orleans Hornets are kind of a disaster, and they're owned by the league right now. The Charlotte team is also a complete disaster in every single way. There's been talk of Memphis being for sale. I know there's some lease issues there that might really complicate that, but there's been talk of that as well. So basically the general tenor is that getting a team is no problem at all, and it doesn't have to necessarily be Sacramento, but the arena is the issue. And if they get, that's why people got excited here. It just seemed to be the first legitimate step toward getting an arena again in Seattle since the Sonics left.
You think there's any sense of buyer's remorse because the team in Oklahoma that left as the Supersonics is now one of the better? If the Oklahoma team wasn't as good as they are playing right now, do you think people would be thinking, geez, we could have had a V8 moment here?
In
other words, would people care if Oklahoma was lousy? Would people care as much?
No. I don't think that matters. I don't think how Oklahoma City is playing now matters at all. What matters is that for 41 years there was an NBA team here that, again, was very well supported. I read that nationally, and I guess it bothers me being a Seattleite because lack of support had nothing to do with it. It was the circumstances of the arena and the ownership at the time, and then the team being bought by an owner from Oklahoma City whose desire was nothing but to take the team to Oklahoma City. So that left a sour taste in everybody's mouth, how that went down. And there's a lot of people who don't want a team back because everybody feels jilted by the NBA. David Stern, I think people feel like he should have stuck up more for Seattle. But he kind of got in the crosshairs with some of the politicians here and just decided to, make his own power play and show the politicians here who had the real power here and that he could let a team walk if it wanted to. How good Oklahoma City is doing now. Yeah, your hardcore basketball fans certainly look at that. Kevin Durant played here for 1 year in Seattle, so everybody knew he was going to be good. And certainly people look at that and go, man, it's too bad that team's not here now. But I don't think that's really what's leading to an effort now. It's more of just, for 41 years they had a team here. It was the first pro team in Seattle, the only team that did win an NBA championship. They were very good throughout the 90s. They didn't win a championship, but had probably the second or third best cumulative record in that decade. So it doesn't take people, you don't have to be that old to realize when this was a very good team that really, was the number one team in the city for quite a while.
Well, down here, fans like the Kings, but not the Maloofs. So some fans down here might tell you, be careful what you wish for if Sacramento ends up in play. But thanks for joining us this morning, Bob.
All right, thank you.
Bob Condotta is a sports writer for the Seattle Times, a city looking for an NBA team. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. Coming up, not just mountain caves, but caves in the Himalayan mountains.